The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Bjorkman, and Judge Hooten. The Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Thank you. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have our last of five cases from our calendar before us now, and it is A21-0104, Otterson v. Otterson. Mr. Reed, you are here representing the appellant, and I guess we have no respondent on the other side in this case. So you will have, in that case, 15 minutes for your argument. And when you begin, if you could just please state your name and the party you represent for the record.
Very good. And thank you and good afternoon to the court. My name is Sean Reed. May it please the court. I represent the appellant, Tammy Sunbaum, in this matter. And the court in its recitation or calling of the case is correct. The respondent, Mr. Troy Otterson, did not file a brief in this matter, and pursuant to this court's order of July 16th and Rule 142.03, I stand here alone today.
Can I ask you this question? Because I'm trying to understand, you know, the way it's written, she's going to get $2,000, whether it's child support or spousal maintenance. And as I read the J&D, I was thinking, well, maybe it's the tax ramifications, but the J&D basically rules out any adverse tax ramifications of receiving spousal maintenance and eliminates any benefits, I assume, to the appellant. Why are we here? I guess I'm trying to understand what's really at issue here.
And thank you, Judge Hooten. I appreciate that question. You're absolutely correct. The judgment and decree did contemplate originally that the child support was set at $2,000, as you indicated. And it further indicates that if, for whatever reason, child support is reduced, then the support, the maintenance side, increases. So basically, we come back to the level playing field. Now, the difference, and I think herein lies the rub, in terms of the spousal maintenance component, the county is not involved in terms of the enforcement portion. And what we've seen, because your question was, well, that was my thought originally too. It's like, well, we don't care. We're in the same spot. However, once the county leaves the scene, we lose a lot of the ability to enforce it. And so that's really why we're here. We're here to appeal the child's support component of it. And ultimately, depending upon what this court's decision is, we may have to continue to try to chase the contempt issue for the non-payment of the spousal maintenance. But that's a very, very appropriate question to ask as to why we're all here. And that's why we are. So, so really what we're here is to address the question of whether or not Child Support Magistrate Eck made an error when she reduced the child support from $2,000 down to $388 by virtue of that November 23rd, 2020 order. So the standard of review that this court has to apply here is whether or not there's a clear error, whether it's a district court that makes the decision or the child support magistrate that makes the decision, it's whether or not there was an error. And there's some broad discretion in modifications of child support motions. They're going to be upheld unless there's that clear error, and the decision is against the logic and the facts contained within the record.
So Mr. Reed, did I understand you to be then that the district court, your position is the district court made erroneous factual determinations, didn't misapply the law? So we're here on kind of a fact-based argument. Do I have that right?
Primarily, I think the court also maybe perhaps misapplied the statutes as well. And I can address both points right now. So let me start with where I think the decision is contrary to the facts contained within the record. So Child Support Magistrate Act primarily ruled that the support should be lowered because Mr. Otterson had inability to work in his field due to a billing restriction under the MHCP, and some pending criminal drug charges. Now, that's contrary to the record itself. In fact, it's contrary Well, let me rephrase that. That was a little sloppy on my part. Yes, there was a billing restriction. There's no doubt. There's no dispute about that. And yes, there was some underlying criminal charges. There's no dispute about that. However, the billing restriction does not prevent Mr. Otterson from working within the mental health field. And he admits that. That's cited in my brief. There's no dispute about that. Likewise, the pending criminal charge, or that which is now pled out, is not a restriction either. And that's also contrary to Mr. Otterson's own testimony when he responded to Matt. And I see Judge Hooten, looks like you have a question.
Well, I do, because as I read this judge's order, this case has a lot of history, and they had been through the contempt route, and they've done everything they can do to get money basically out of the husband. And they haven't been very successful, and he wasn't able to purge the contempt conditions. I think the judge just basically made the reasonable inference that a guy who has a pending drug charge and has had issues with excessive billing to the point that he's basically cut off from the state of Minnesota and Medicare and Medicaid and from a major insurance company, isn't going to be an employee that's going to easily find a job in the mental health field. Is that an incorrect, reasonable assumption, a reasonable inference?
I think it's a reasonable inference in any other case but this. And let me explain why I say that. I think you have to take a step back then, Judge Hooten, and look at the total picture here. And maybe the starting point is, where is Mr. Otterson currently working for? And who he's currently working for is his girlfriend. His girlfriend owns the Priorello's Palm Grove restaurant in Bovee. And so, A, it's outside his field. B, he's working for his girlfriend for $10 an hour. And allegedly, he's also staying in an unfurnished room next to the bar for $500. Now, the problem with Mr. Otterson throughout the history of this litigation is there's a problem with documentation. The court asks for it, I ask for it, and we get little or nothing. We've never seen payment of rent history for Mr. Otterson to his girlfriend, supposedly for this unfurnished room. We don't see, there's no written lease agreement, if I recall correctly, on that. So what we have here is Mr. Otterson has found the perfect solution to avoid his child support obligation. He happens to be involved with a girlfriend who can, quote, hire him for less than the minimum wage to work at his bar at her bar outside his field. And now he's been able to finally avoid this child support obligation. Now, this isn't...
I understand your argument. I mean, that's exactly what you argued to the district court, that he was voluntarily underemployed and he made these decisions. And the fact, I mean, the court found otherwise and cited facts about his continued use of drugs and the billing issues and everything else. How is this court in a position to second guess that?
Well, again, I guess I'm not asking the court to second guess that. I think you look at the record itself and the context, right? I started this argument talking about the application of the facts. Let me apply those facts to the various statutes that are important here. So the first one is 518A39. That's the child support modification statute. And the important provision within that is it's subdivision 2B5, which states that a reduction in income cannot be through the fault of the party. We also look at 518A32, subdivision 3, and that's the statute that defines when a person is underemployed. And it's the person's burden to prove under that statute that they are not underemployed. And so in that case, the person seeking the reduction would have to demonstrate that the underemployment, if you would, is temporary, and it's likely to lead to an increase of income. we look at the facts in this case, Mr. Otterson did not make any showing to that. He's working at his girlfriend's bar for $10 an hour. He made no indication that it's temporary. There's no proof of that. He's still working there today. And it's certainly not going to lead to an increase of income. The second element under that statute is that there's going to be a showing that this is a bona fide career change and that it outweighs the adverse effect of having diminished income. Well, I don't think anyone here can seriously accept the fact that him working in Bovee, Minnesota for his girlfriend for $10 an hour is a bona fide career change.
Counsel, I'm going to ask you, Counsel, just to get a little closer to your microphone and see if we can eliminate some of the static.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm sorry for that. I don't think anyone can truly argue that this is a bona fide career change. This is game plan.
Except, you know, and I thought the judge's order, and I'm looking at finding number 42. I mean, the judge says the petitioner can't have it both ways. If the father of these children is so unstable and under the influence of drugs that he cannot even visit with his children without supervision, then I would say that he's going to have some difficulty obtaining any job in the mental health field. I mean, how is that clearly erroneous? I guess I didn't find anything. I didn't find that assertion by the court to be inaccurate.
And again, I guess, Your Honor, you have to look at the entire record. And I've got the benefit of being involved with this case post-divorce for quite some time. And so I think the other important factor to look at is the degree of effort that Mr. Otterson has put in to trying to find work in the mental health field. Now, I cited his efforts in my brief, and I believe the most evidence that he showed of his efforts was he applied for, I think there was a total of 7 jobs that he applied for, of which there were either 3 or 4 that were in the mental health field. And the evidence that he produces basically are emails showing that he applied to something through Indeed. Now, I'm sorry, but 3 or 4 job applications is not a great effort. And I think what we have to do is we have to balance this also against the strong public policy argument here. And that's stated in the Putz case, which I think is still the controlling case here, and which governs the underemployment aspect. And the policy is that there's a strong policy that parents support their children, and it shouldn't be an easy job for them to avoid that. And that's what's exactly going on in this case. Now, since I mentioned the Putz case, let me just kind of apply or compare that the people involved. So in that case, if I recall my facts right, the obligor in that case changed jobs or went back to university in order to perhaps pursue a different career. And if I remember the holding of Putz correctly, they found that he was underemployed. Now, Justice Page filed a separate concurring opinion saying, well, that concerns me because obligor should have an opportunity to go out and improve themselves by going to school. But that's the law. And so if we compare the person who's going to university and they're underemployed voluntarily to Mr. Otterson, who's left his field, making minimal effort to try to find work in the field, even though he admits that he can work without billing, even though he admits that there's nothing in the criminal case that prevents him from moving forward. He's working for his girlfriend for $10 an hour. I think that is telling. And if the Putz obligor was found to be voluntarily underemployed under these facts, certainly Mr. Otterson should as well, particularly judging the public, holding that against the public policy that we have here. I'm asking the court to find that Magistrate X decision is clearly against the facts and the record. It's against logic and also against the contrary to the statutes that I've mentioned. So unless the court has any other questions of me, I will stand down.
Doesn't look like it. Thank you very much, Mr. Reed. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision.